Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Season so much more important for Garoppolo because he still has, he just hasn't had a large enough body of work to prove that, hey, I am the guy to lead this team. Now, they paid him for the five games that they won at the end of the year before. They said, you know, they believed, hey, this is the guy. But the NFL is about consistency and proving it over a longer period of time. And
defenses adjust.
Totally. Yeah. And that's it. And so for Garoppolo, the only thing it would really cost you if you're the Orcs is money, but not cap space, because they have the cap space. And because they, when they paid him all that guaranteed money, that was when they had all the space to do it anyway. So in a lot of ways, Morata structured this thing brilliantly.
And it's a theme across all of these contracts. So far, we haven't seen the 49ers sign a guy who is of the caliber and of the pedigree that he would need guaranteed money for a long time throughout his deal. And a lot of those guys signed this year. I mean, I just mentioned one. C.J. Mosley got that 43, or I think it was 43 million guaranteed. Earl Thomas, huge guarantees this year. A lot of people thought the 49ers would be in on Earl Thomas.
Right.
I think they would have been in on him had the price been what people expected it to be, 2 years, maybe 30 million guaranteed. But when that number went up over 40, when he signed, you know, what was basically a long-term deal with the Baltimore Ravens, all of a sudden, I don't think the 49ers were quite willing to go there, because it seems the contracts that they're going for are the ones that have the easy ripcord.
Yeah.
Guys like Earl Thomas, guys like C.J. Mosley didn't have that easy ripcord.
Yeah.
I know the 49ers have, you know, they tried to trade for Khalil Mack. That definitely wouldn't have been an easy ripcord. But
yeah,
that's the next level of player, the guy without any question marks,
right,
that you are willing to go all in on with that kind of money. And so far, this 49ers regime, we haven't really seen that yet. We've heard about the attempts to try to get OBJ. We've heard about the attempts to try to get Khalil Mack. But they haven't quite been willing to pay enough in the trade scenarios for those two guys quite yet. So we'll see if that happens down the road.
Yeah.
Maybe next offseason there'll be another opportunity. But so far, I think that the types of deals that they're offering, because there is so much similarity across the board with the easy eject button after a year,
yeah,
or two,
mm-hmm,
it's fascinating because you could see how this front office thinks.
Yeah, and they're looking for bang for their buck. I think the Earl Thomas thing was what drew the ire of a lot of 49ers fans, because you see what he'd be. Obviously, he's played in this defense, and the natural connection, the same way Richard Sherman came here, you could see. I think a lot of people felt like Earl Thomas coming to the Niners was a foregone conclusion. But if it wasn't Dallas, I thought the Ravens move shocked a lot of people. But that's a huge amount of guaranteed money to give Earl Thomas. I mean, how serious did those talks get with Earl Thomas?
I think that the 49ers, I mean, they got Twitter serious. Earl Thomas followed John Lynch.
Oh, there we go.
I mean, Richard Sherman, in effect, is a spokesman for the 49ers front office. And he went out and said on the record of the combine, the 49ers are going to go after this guy. You know, I've been in some Twitter discussions where some fans have tried to hop in and tell Richard Sherman to pipe down, that he doesn't know what he's talking about when he, you know, tweets something about, or I think I tweeted something about Richard Sherman saying something about what the 49ers might do, and some fan basically told Richard Sherman on Twitter to stay in his lane, and
wow,
Richard Sherman tweeted back and said, you stay in your lane. I talk to the front office. I could say what I want. So
right,
he negotiated his own deal. I think, you know, he's a veteran. I think that when Richard Sherman says the 49ers will pursue Earl Thomas, but he was realistic about it. He said he was going to go to the team that offered the most money.
Yeah.
And he said financially, if Earl Thomas's demands or another team's offer exceeds what our front office is willing to do, we're not going to get him. So I think that the 49ers were earnestly interested, but that price tag, you know, was just not in line with how they're structuring these other deals. And keep in mind that, you know, that was a non-asterisk price tag for an asterisk player. Earl Thomas still has a rod in his leg right now. So everybody talking about Kwon Alexander coming off a torn ACL at age 24. Well, I know that Earl Thomas is a broken leg. That's not an ACL, but he's 6 years older, and he actually has metal in his leg. So it's not like you're getting a risk-free signing for that kind of guaranteed money. And hopefully by my explanation here, you can understand how philosophically that just didn't fall in line with what the 49ers are doing with the rest of their offseason.
For sure. And it sounds like Earl Thomas was at a point where, hey, he's already won a Super Bowl. He wants to get paid. And this is probably his last chance to get a huge, massive contract. And I think it was less about where I land and, you know, what the culture's like and what the city's like and how ready this team is to win versus just dollars and cents. And while, you know, I know that might not sit great with a lot of fans because, you know, they want to root for players who only care about winning. This is the business side of it, especially in the NFL. I mean, it's so different, David, in the NFL than it is in the other leagues because these teams can get out from these deals and these players are just so expendable. In the NBA, the players have all the control. I mean, you see Kevin Durant signing these two-year deals with a player option for the second year. Major League Baseball, it's all about, you know, the signing these long contracts. That's everybody wants the Bryce Harper, the Manny Machado deal because you're going to get every cent of that. In the NFL, it all comes down to that guaranteed money and really, I feel like ownership in the NFL has way more control over, you know, the contracts and the way this stuff all breaks down versus any of the other sports.
Yeah. And, you know, in the NFL with the injury we just talked about of the 49ers with the injury rate where it is, and it just seems to be getting worse, even though they're supposedly making the game quote-unquote safer.
Goodell cares about player safety. We all know that, but we're going to have 18 regular season games pretty soon, but I care about player safety, y'all.
You understand, though, why fully guaranteed money is so important when you watch one of these games, especially from the sideline, when you're there and you see the violence of some of these hits, and then you see how short these careers are.
Yeah,
you know, so guys are it's tough because, as you said earlier, it's so easy to cut some of these lower tier players loose. Look at Cassius Marsh with the 49ers. They exercised the second year option and then 4 days later they cut him. They didn't owe him anything.
Right.
After that, none of that money on the second year was guaranteed. So even though the 49ers picked up the option, you know, I think he even posted on social media to celebrate. You know, probably cracked open a cold one there and drank a little bit. A
couple of kung fu kicks out there.
Yeah, a little celebratory a dance.
I was so tired, by the way.
49ers trade for and then sign D Ford. And all of a sudden, it looks like somebody walked in and beat out Cassius Marsh. And he doesn't have any of that money now for the second year. So it's extremely fickle in the NFL, especially for guys who are not upper tier who can get those big fully guaranteed deals. So you can see why those deals are so coveted and why fully guaranteed money means so much.
Absolutely. All right. 888-957-9570. We got David Lombardi of The Athletic in studio. 95795 on the Chilton Autobody text line. If you have some questions, we can get into that. I want to talk to him about the Oakland Raiders as well. Also, the NFL draft's coming up. We know this is a critical draft for this regime. I want to ask him some questions about John Lynch and the wide receiver position in particular, the moves the 49ers made, and more importantly, some of the moves they didn't make as far as acquiring Odell Beckham Jr. or even Antonio Brown. So we have a lot to discuss. You can hop in if you'd like. 888-957-9570. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1. KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. It's St. Patrick's Day. It's Ryan Covey with you with David Lombardi of The Athletic. 95.7 The Game.
To 95.7 The Game. Here's your host, Ryan Covey.
James Pappas in the other room with the custom rejoin. It had my name on it and everything, baby. Oh, it feels so good. All right. What's happening, everybody? Sitting in studio with David Lombardi of The Athletic, talking a little NFL free agency draft. Couple of weeks away. Let's talk a little bit about the wide receivers and how this kind of all went down. So first, Antonio Brown's out there. We know that the Steelers are going to trade him. First, we hear Buffalo. The 49ers were always rumored to be a team that would potentially be after Antonio Brown, but we never heard anything from the 49ers about that. But the fact that Antonio Brown gets traded to the Oakland Raiders, and then Odell Beckham Jr. was another name that was out there for a long time. Ultimately, he goes to the Cleveland Browns. And then the 49ers signed Jordan Matthews. Now, if you're going to pay a quarterback a ton of cash, and you have Kyle Shanahan, who's an offensive mind, while I feel like Kyle is the kind of coach that can kind of make do with not the necessarily top shelf talent, you still would like to see him with some elite talent, particularly at the wide receiver position, like, oh, I don't know, like Julio Jones when he was in Atlanta, what they were able to do with Julio. Did it surprise you that they didn't more aggressively pursue Odell Beckham Jr., and how close did they come to ever making that deal? Because I heard New York wanted the number two overall pick.
Yes, and that's what the 49ers did not want to give up. So I think it just came down to that. It came down to the 49ers valuing their number two pick over adding another wide receiver. And I think that shed some light on what Kyle Shanahan feels about the value of the wide receiver position. I think that Kyle Shanahan thinks very highly of his ability to scheme.
Right.
As he should. He is excellent. But I think that Twitter is in love with the concept of a star wide receiver. Those are the entertainers. Those are the guys that infatuate NFL fans the most. So I think there you have the disconnect. There is this theory that the 49ers offense, to be effective, needs a top, quote-unquote, number one wide receiver. And ideally, he needs to be 6'3 or 6'4 and look like Julio Jones. And that theory gets fuel from the fact that Kyle Shanahan ran the NFL's number one-rated offense with Julio Jones in Atlanta. The counterpoint to that is Kyle Shanahan has succeeded, I think, with the 49ers offensively, even without a number one wide receiver, when he has had his quarterback healthy. The problem there is that the sample size is still really small. But in the seven games that they've had Jimmy Garoppolo, they're number three or number four in the league in scoring. Yeah. They're in the upper 20s points per game. And we saw late in the year when they had that big five-game stretch of Garoppolo in 2017, maybe it's because the league was caught off guard, couldn't adjust to him. You know, the Jaguars looked really confused in that game on Christmas Eve. But the 49ers led the league in scoring. They led the league in offensive efficiency. And they had a bunch of no-names at wide receiver. I mean, that was the year where Pierre Garçon was pretty good for the first eight games, but he wasn't in anymore.
Yeah, it was like Marquise Goodwin.
He made Marquise Goodwin look like a number one. They had Trent Taylor. Trent Taylor was one of the best slots in football. George Kittle blew up because he got healthy. That was like the first precursor of what was to come there. And I think those five games really support the argument that Kyle Shanahan does not need to invest insane amounts of draft capital or money. And I think the 49ers deemed the number two pick to be an insane amount of draft capital for a wide receiver. So, of course, it's not a black or white argument. Anytime I say this, people say, you're an idiot. They'd be a lot better with Odell Beckham Jr.
Of course they would be
better, but at what cost?
Yeah.
And I think that Kyle Shanahan, his behavior here has verified this. He said, yes, we're going to go for Odell Beckham Jr., but not at the extreme cost. Because I could still scheme an offense that scores 26, 27 points a game without him. And I think that's legitimately how he feels in the 49ers building.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the number two overall pick, David. And by the way, we're joined in studio by David Lombardi of The Athletic, Ryan Covey with you on a Sunday morning on 95.7 The Game. Happy St. Paddy's Day, everybody. Number two overall pick. Now, you've made a trade for Dee Ford. Edge rush, we know, huge need. He's going to play the Leo position. That's what we've heard. 49ers got the two pick. If Kyler Murray goes number one, whether it's to Arizona or maybe another team trades in, the 49ers could be sitting there at two with Bosa on the board. How do you pass up if you're John Lynch not taking Bosa? If you think maybe trading back could be a viable option or play, you know, just going any other route. Do they just have to take Bosa if Kyler Murray goes number one?
You know, the Dee Ford trade made this really interesting because it gave the 49ers so many more options.
Mm-hmm.
In the 4-3 under that the 49ers run, they needed one of those new age, very light speed pass rushers. Nick Bosa is not one of those guys. Those guys are actually, you know, you talk about edge rushers in the draft. Yeah, there were a lot of them this year, but there aren't that many that fit that exact prototype of big burst, very lightweight. I mean, I met D Ford the other day at the 49ers facility at his intro press conference, standing right by him. You'd be crazy, you know, 15, 20 years ago, if somebody told me that that was a defensive lineman in the NFL, be like, whoa, what's going on? This guy, he's 245 pounds.
Yeah.
He looks like a speedy linebacker. I mean, that's about the weight that Navarro Bowman and Patrick sure. Willis used to be. But he's going to be putting his hand down in the dirt, and he's going to be rushing off that edge. And that's what the Leo position has become in this Seattle defensive scheme. You just need a guy to rip after the quarterback with speed. So with that trade, the 49ers got that prototypical light, fast edge rusher that they need. And that opens up the door to so many more possibilities to get more of a power guy, which I think Nick Bosa is a guy that does everything. I think he's power and speed. He has athleticism. But they needed to get the 250-pounder out of the way so they can get the 260-plus guys. You know, they can get those to fortify the roster now so that they think Nick Bosa is good enough. Go ahead, get him at two. You know, if you like Josh Allen better, go ahead, draft him. Or if you think that one of those guys is going to drop a little bit further and you could earn some more draft capital through a trade, do that. It just depends on who the 49ers value the most. And a lot of people are speculating they may value the Alabama kid, the interior lineman,
Quinnen
Williams,
yeah.
the most. And that would really shake things up because there's already a glut of interior linemen.
Yeah.
If that happens, Twitter would melt down.
Yep.
You know, 75% of people would disown the 49ers, you know, at least verbally on Twitter. Then they'd come back later. But it would create this probably some trades, probably some high profile. I don't know. There'd be a lot of shuffling if that happened, but do not rule it out because the 49ers have two options. They can go best player available or they can trade back.
Yeah.
And or they could go for particular scheme fit. But I don't think that teams with the number two pick really do that in the NFL if they're a competent franchise right now. So I think whoever they deem is the best player available, they'll take unless they want to trade back.
How about the notion that this team has taken D linemen with their first overall pick for, you know, you got Solomon Thomas, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, whether it's Quinnen Williams or Bosa, here we go again, another high draft pick going to that defensive line.
Well, people were, you know, already some of the public, I think, was exasperated when they traded for D Ford. Oh, another defensive lineman, but it's so important to differentiate between positions on the defensive line.
D-tackle and D-end, yeah.
Exactly. And then even with the D-ends, there's a difference between a Leo and more of a power-rushing D-end. So you got your speed-rushing guy, your power-rushing guy. And that's why I think eliminating the speed-rushing need with, you know, your 245-pound explosive rusher and D Ford allows the 49ers to focus on the other spots. Now, out of the other spots, those interior spots are pretty full right now. So that's the whole thing here. You already have Eric Armstead. You already have Solomon Thomas, who's probably more effective on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously
I think
have
he's three technique for sure.
Exactly. So
yeah.
So that's why bringing in a guy like Quinnen Williams would create such an interesting logjam. It'd be fun to write about, that's for sure. But boy, the emotions would run high because year after year, they used their first-round draft capital on an interior defensive lineman, and they picked another interior defensive lineman last year, Kentavious Street, with a torn ACL.
Team ACL, baby, let's go!
I mean, if you have two things that are going to get 49ers fans goat right now, they accomplished both of them with one draft pick, right? They draft an interior defensive lineman when everybody wanted an edge rusher.
Yeah.
And he had a torn ACL. And he was like 3 weeks off of the torn ACL. It was the perfect storm. Thankfully, it was a fifth-round draft pick. So I just imagine if that was a little bit higher.
Yeah, and a lot of 49ers fans checking in on the Chilton Autobody text line about John Lynch and an inherent lack of trust for him to do the right thing in the draft. Now, McGlinchey, while not sexy, I think McGlinchey, that's a solid pick right there. And I think, unfortunately, with draft classes, because we were kind of duped in year one, feeling like after the end of year one, you look back, Colbert, Witherspoon, these guys are talents. Reuben Foster, when he was on the field, he looked pretty damn good. You got George Kittle. Hey, C.J. Beathard, hell, you know, he had some nice moments as a backup quarterback on him, you know, their first win of the year. So you were feeling pretty good about that draft class. And then in year two, there was this marked regression across the board. Foster's gone. Thomas is a bust. Witherspoon's regressed. Colbert's on IR. You know, Witherspoon ended up on IR. That draft, C.J. Beathard showed that he was a backup at best. So I think year two, while on the surface the draft looks pretty good right now, we just don't know. And we already went through this with the year one draft where we thought it was a good class, and then it kind of proved, other than George Kittle, not to be particularly fruitful. So I think John Lynch doesn't quite have the trust of 49ers fans. And, you know, keep in mind, it was Jed York and ultimately Kyle Shanahan that decided to bring in a guy with zero experience at the general manager position, which, hey, you think there might be a few bumps in the road, maybe some growing pains? Like, absolutely. So it's almost sounds silly to say, boy, I didn't really see this coming. Again, like, well, how could you not? Like, this guy didn't have any experience. So where is the John Lynch trust factor for you? And more importantly, you know, with this organization, with his ability to evaluate and ultimately make the right pick?
I'm a sit back and let things play out kind of guy. And I think that John Lynch was a rookie, right, at the whole GM thing. And the first crop of players, especially the defenders, which people attribute to him, Kyle Shanahan is more of the offensive mind. But for the defensive guys, they were rookies too in 2017. You mentioned Akello Witherspoon. You mentioned Adrian Colbert. They had strong finishes to that season. They both definitely had sophomore slumps in 2018.
Yeah.
The story's not complete. I mean, as quickly as people want to rush to judgment on social media.
You sound like you love Twitter.
Yeah.
At Lombardi himself, if you want to follow.
At Lombardi himself. We got the big salary cap article on The Athletic tweeted out there, so you go check it out. But as much as people want to make that quick 140-character rush to judgment, so it goes viral, and, you know, I told you so.
Sure.
3 years ago, they could point back at that tweet. I think doing so is a fool's errand at this point, just because the story can still go any which number of ways. We have seen this many times in the NFL. A guy has a promising rookie season, a bad second season, and then he turns it on years three, four, especially in the contract year. I mean, just look at Dee Ford, the player the 49ers just signed. He led the NFL in pressures last year.
Right.
Pro Football Focus said he was the best edge rusher in the entire National Football League. Throughout two or three years, people were calling him a bust in Kansas City.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a whole other argument. Was that just a contract year performance? Is he going to be able to keep it up? The point is that his best year was in year four, and we're already trying to judge, you know, and close the book on Akello Witherspoon and Adrian Colbert after year two, 2 years which have seen quite a bit of injuries for those two guys. So I think it's still too early, and I think that that's why 2019 is such a litmus test for this 49ers front office, because by year three, you can really start to tell the trajectory. The sophomore slump's out of the way.
Sure.
And there's a reason why the 49ers brought in Jason Verrett, former Pro Bowl cornerback, other than, okay, you know, maybe he'll start, maybe he'll play for us. They also wanted him to provide Akello Witherspoon with some competition.
Sure.
Last year, Akello Witherspoon was gifted that starting spot.
Yeah.
He had to earn it his rookie year. He was not the starter day one. He worked his way up onto the 46-man roster, ultimately started at the end of the season. He went through the entire 2018 offseason knowing that he was going to be the starter.
Yeah, he was the incumbent at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally different mentality than when he was a hungry rookie having to earn his stripes. And I think a lot of that explains why the performance regressed in year two. So I think the 49ers made sure that they got some extra competition this offseason for Akello Witherspoon in that secondary.
Yeah, and about the secondary, Jimmy Ward being re-signed, and I know once you weren't able to acquire Earl Thomas, at least there's some consistency there with Jimmy Ward. This guy's been moved around the board probably more times than he would have liked to. And now you've got Colbert as, I guess, would be the backup at free safety. So let's talk about how the secondary shapes up right now, and who do you think's in play to be the starters and the backups?
Well, so everybody's saying, oh, well, now they're moving Jimmy Ward back to safety. He takes over that job. I'm not that sure, because in 2017, down the stretch run, It was Adrian Colbert who took over the free safety job after Jimmy Ward got hurt.
Right.
And then in the offseason, we asked John Lynch, well, hey, Colbert played so well, you know, is Ward going to come back or did he get Wally Pipped, you know, from that free safety
sure.
job?
Yeah, yeah.
And he essentially got Wally Pipped. They moved him to cornerback.
Right.
And they said it's Colbert's job.
Yeah.
So the last time that we've seen both of these guys healthy at the same time, Colbert had the free safety job and Jimmy Ward didn't.
Seems like a long time ago now.
It was a long time ago now. But now that Colbert played relatively poorly, especially compared to 2017, and he got hurt, people think that Jimmy Ward has usurped him. But what has Jimmy Ward done to usurp him?
Sure.
You know, that's the problem right now with the 49ers in the secondary, which obviously wasn't good outside of Richard Sherman last year. You don't have players moving forward to overtake somebody.
Right,
you have
yeah.
guys moving back
right,
to get overtaken.
Coming back to the
right?
fold.
Yeah, it's they need a little bit more progress out of these guys. And I think this is, you know, the 49ers would be well suited to actually make this a competition instead of, you know, having assumed starters. And last year, I don't think they announced that Adrian Colbert was the starter or Kelo Witherspoon was the starter.
It was assumed, though.
But it was very assumed.
Yeah.
Yes, it was very assumed. And then, you know, moving Jimmy Ward to cornerback is essentially saying Adrian Colbert is the free safety. So they have to get that together this year because you want the building to be competing.
Yeah.
I think that's extremely important. Any championship franchise has that culture embedded within it.
For sure. No, you make a great point. Talking to David Lombardi of The Athletic, joining me in studio on 95.7 The Game. Ryan Covey with you. Happy Paddy's Day, everybody. Sun is shining, so get on out there and enjoy yourself today. Jordan Matthews, here's a guy that the 49ers have added in free agency. He had a decent start to his career in Philly, had some injury trouble, like a lot of guys the 49ers have acquired in free agency this year. I think I read a stat, 16 of his 22 career touchdowns have come in the red zone, but then it occurred to me, well, don't most touchdowns come in the red zone? I mean, unless you broke one.
You're
from,
onto something.
Right. I was thinking to myself, well, that's, and if it was like 21 of 22, I'd say, okay, but 16 of 22, I mean, wouldn't most wide receivers' first 22 touchdowns, 16 of them come in the red zone?
If anything, it's an indictment on his speed and explosiveness, right? He can only
sure.
score from close range.
Right.
This guy's not scoring any 30, 40, 50 right. plus yard touchdowns. I mean, you could twist any stat to,
sure.
to fit any narrative
yeah.
that you want. The bottom line is that Kyle Shanahan doesn't believe that height is a necessary red zone weapon. A lot of, you know, they're college teams that love the fade right here in the Bay Area. Stanford loves the fade pass.
I hate the fade.
I do too.
Hate it. So do 49ers fans in the Super Bowl.
And I don't think that Kyle Shanahan likes it either. I don't want to, you know, put his exact thoughts on air right now because I don't know them. But in general conversations, we've kind of talked about big receivers. This was last year and you know, kind of just tossing the ball up. And he almost implied that, you know, that wasn't great football, that he liked to scheme guys open, that he wanted to be a little bit more sophisticated
sure.
than just the, you know, very blunt hammer of the fade where you send a 6'5 guy up and try to beat a cornerback. You're not scheming any separation in that regard. And that's why the 49ers, up until this Jordan Matthews signing, all the receivers had been, you know, guys with a lot of short area quickness. A
sure.
lot of guys, a lot of good three cone guys. The Jordan Matthews signing is the first divergence from that strategy. You look at his spider chart, look at his, you know, measurables. He's the tallest guy all of a sudden. He's 6'3". He's got a lot of straight line speed, but he didn't measure well a few years ago at the combine and all the three cone and all that.
But doesn't that give him versatility, though, at the wide receiver position?
Exactly. So I think that it also adds some competition over the offseason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matthews is far from a perfect pickup. He hasn't been the 70 or 80 catch guy for a couple years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of those injuries happen. So it'll be interesting to see who makes the team, how the competition shakes up. But you do want to give yourself that big guy. I think even though Kyle Shanahan, you know, may not like the fade pattern as much as David Shaw at Stanford likes it, you know, running the fade all the time into the end zone, I think it's still something necessary to have, especially with a lot of defenses getting smaller now.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of defenses getting smaller, so you want to win that comparative advantage.
And I know you're a Stanford guy. Arcega Whiteside, where do you think this guy is the best fit in an NFL scheme, and how high do you think he's going to go?
Yeah, I think he could run routes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Stanford utilized him to the, you know, 100% max of his ability. I thought you saw a few times where he was running some nice slant routes, some, you know, good cuts on those out patterns. I think he's going to be a good player in the NFL. I don't think he's, there's this impression of him. Everybody calls him the Arcegatron, you know, just a guy that's going to post up in the back corner of the end zone. You can toss it up to him, and he mauled college defensive backs. You know, poor college defensive backs. Some of these 5'9", 5'10 guys never had
for
a chance.
Sure.
It's going to be a lot harder to do that in the NFL, and I think he's going to have to use some of the other skill. You know, he had his dad and his mom were both professional basketball players in Spain back overseas, and he's got this cool pedigree. So I think he's a guy that can fit in a whole lot of different schemes just because I don't think he's just a fade machine. And I think he could block, too, which is important.
Hey, I want to ask you this. David Lombardi in studio here on a Sunday morning of The Athletic, talking a little 49ers and a little NFL free agency. I asked about the approval rating for Kyle Shanahan, and I still believe that there's a lot of trust in that front office that he's the right guy for the job, despite the fact the record is 10-22. For John Lynch to get this draft right and this free agency period right, how critical is that as far as, I know he's got a 6-year deal, but the Yorks have shown a willingness, if they feel like it's not going in the right direction, if nothing else, pulling the plug on Kelly, pulling the plug on Tom Sula. They've shown a willingness to do that. Now, I think it is important to give these guys room to operate. I know that they inherited a mess. But how satisfied do you feel like they are with the John Lynch hiring? Because this was a guy that Shanahan advocated for, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I just got to – at this point, you have to look at the details, and you have to look at, you know, we talked about a lot of the contractual situations.
Sure.
You have to look at the, I don't want to say gambles, but I guess they are gambles in a way. You have to look at the investments and the gambles the 49ers are making and evaluate when they expect the payoffs to come. And then you have to evaluate if you think they will come. And I just think that because of the nature of everything that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have done, there is a lot of uncertainty moving forward. There's a pretty big delta between things could go really right with a guy like Quan Alexander or mm-hmm. D. Ford, or, you know, things could go really wrong. And, you know, D. Ford could have just had a contract year, and he'll tank, and he'll need another back surgery. Quan Alexander will never be fast again. And, boy, all of a sudden that treadmill speeds up, and the 49ers, John Lynch is not running fast enough.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just so hard for me to answer, you know, that definitively until I see 2019.
Yeah.
And this is what I've been saying all along. I think that 2019 is the year where everything will crystallize as far as are the 49ers in the right hands or not.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating because you don't often see one season have this much pressure on it. But all the dominoes kind of made this happen. The Jimmy Garoppolo ACL tear last year. And we haven't even been to the draft yet. They have to hit on this. If you have the number 2 pick, you better make it right, because your last, you know, top 5 pick isn't really playing like a top 5 pick right now. So
nowhere near.
How long
is Solomon Thomas's leash, do you think? And I mean, at what point do they just have to say this was a bust? Is this just another one of those year 3 is the make it or break it year? Is it the prove it year?
Well, you look at Solomon Thomas's contract, and this is how the NFL works these days. There is not much leeway for rookie contracts. Every spot has a slot, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
which is the way it needed to be, because they were paying, you know, the Jamarcus Russells of the world and the Sam Bradfords. These guys getting all this guaranteed money. They never even paid a plate of down of football in the NFL.
Exactly. But it still is very, very costly to draft a guy in the top 5 and have him miss. These financial requirements make hitting on your first round draft pick very important. And the fact that the 49ers, as of right now, you can say missed on both of their first round draft picks in that 2017 cycle.
Sure.
Reuben Foster's not on the team anymore. The fact that didn't work out for them is extremely damaging. And that's why they're trying to get as much as they can from Solomon Thomas. Because if they cut him this year, that racks up $16.6 million in dead money. That's more dead money than the Giants are paying against the cap for Odell Beckham right now.
Damn.
The Giants had just signed Odell Beckham to that new deal.
They weren't trading him.
Exactly. and that just shows that the rudderless franchise, right? They don't know what they're doing with him, because by trading him away and having the signing bonus money wasn't on the salary cap yet, because that's prorated over the years of the contract. I think, what was it, 5 years, $90 million, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So $16 million of that signing bonus is now on the Giants' books. Everybody's freaking out about how much dead money that is. Well, that just goes to show you how tethered the 49ers are to Solomon Thomas. It'd be $16.6 million in dead money, and they just can't take that hit right now. I mean, they just spent the second most out of any NFL team in free agency at, what, $53.2 million, I think I calculated. So they can't take a $16.6 million dead money hit right now. Next year, it drops and it cuts in half. It's $8.9 million.
Okay.
So you could theoretically walk away from him next year. I don't think they'll do it, because I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's a top five draft big caliber
right.
player. So,
and unfortunately, that's going to carry him around his whole career. And I never want to fault a player for where he gets drafted, but that's always going to be at the forefront of 49ers fans' mind. All right, on the other side, David Lombardi of The Athletic in studio with me. I want to get into the running back conversation, the Tevin Coleman signing. I want to talk about that. And I want to get into some Oakland Raiders discussion as well, some of the moves that they've made. They've got three first-round picks. Mike Mayock has been a busy, busy man. You've got a piece in The Athletic about that as well. So we'll get into that conversation. All coming up, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's your host, Ryan Covey.
Oh, this is a good little jam here, Pappas. I'm feeling this. What is this, my man? What do we got on here? A little triple X. All right. Appreciate that. Nice. Rolling along on a Sunday morning. It's Ryan Covey with you. I've got David Lombardi of The Athletic in studio, of course. Covers a lot of different sports and a lot of different subjects for The Athletic, but been doing a lot of work with the 49ers. He's also got a piece on the Oakland Raiders as well. David, the 49ers have been very active in free agency. They spent a lot of money. You gave me the total number. That was
$53.6 million. That's my estimate. I broke down all the numbers. It's on The Athletic right now, like 2,700-word 49ers salary cap breakdown, and I'm not a math guy, so...
Neither am I.
You may want to double-check my work there. No, I put it through the calculator four or five times just to make sure that it was correct. Don't want to be feeding wrong information. And then, you know, a lot of this stuff is complicated because the contractual details don't always come out right away. So I was wanting to write this piece back on Tuesday or Wednesday, but the D Ford numbers didn't come until yesterday morning. And
right.
It's like, surprise, David, you're not working out today. You're not going to be able to do anything today. The D Ford numbers came out.
Right.
Time to write the salary cap breakdown. Now, so I was able to write it because we had the D Ford and the Quan Alexander numbers, but we don't have the Jordan Matthews numbers yet. We don't have the David Mayo numbers yet. Obviously, these are smaller hits, but so I just estimated that Jordan Matthews is going to have a cap hit of $5 million this year.
Okay.
I mean, you could correct me if you think I'm wrong. I estimated that David Mayo, special teams ace, $3 million, because Raheem Mostert is going to make $2.9 million a year, so I kind of assumed $3 million there.
Sure.
So, I factored those numbers in. I added it all up, $53.6 million, which is number two in the NFL, spending against the cap for 2019.
Yeah, and they had cap space for sure. So if nothing else, 49ers fans got to feel good about the fact that they were going out and spending some of that money and filling some of these holes. Let's talk about the Tevin Coleman acquisition. Now, this is intriguing to me on a number of levels. I like Tevin Coleman. I think Tevin Coleman's a good back. He's a nice fit in this system. We know he's got familiarity with Kyle Shanahan. He can catch the rock out of the backfield. Guy averaged 4.8 a tote last year under Sarkisian in that Atlanta offense, which I know was better last year than it was the first year after Shanahan left, but still leaving a lot to be desired with the level of talent that they have there. He had to take over for Devontae Freeman, who went on IR last year, and it was a little different with him and Ito Smith sharing the backfield as it was with Coleman and Freeman, but I still think Coleman is a serviceable back. But you got the Jerick McKinnon guy, you know, deal still on the books, and he's a guy that never played a down of football for the 49ers last year because he got hurt in the preseason. You got Tevin Coleman. You got Matt Breida, a guy who doesn't cost a lot, and when healthy, showed to be a really nice fit in this scheme. I think he led the NFL in yards per carry for a good chunk of the year. Raheem Mostert, who, like you mentioned, special teams guy, but also a pretty adept back at running the ball. And then Jeff Wilson Jr., a guy that came on late in the year, had a propensity for laying the rock on the turf a little bit, but I watched him play. I was down at field level for one of the games that he played, and he just seems like a real physical runner, likes to initiate contact, which gives them another element. But I just feel like this is a pretty crowded running back room, and I understand, David, that they've had a lot of injuries at the position, and you can't have too many bodies, but you're only dressing three running backs on game days. I mean, maybe four, right? And you still got Kyle Juszczyk in the mix.
You didn't list what I think is the most appealing stat from Tevin Coleman's season last year.
Lay it on me.
16. Played in 16 games.
Oh, there you go.
Didn't get hurt.
That's fair.
That's why the 49ers are doing what they're doing at the running back position right now. Yes, they have too many running backs to suit them all up on game day, but you can't operate under the assumption that everybody's going to stay healthy, even through training camp, because the entire room got hurt last year.
Yeah.
That's why Jeff Wilson played, because everybody else got hurt. And this goes back to the propensity to get injured. The Kyle Shanahan system likes lighter running backs who are extremely fast. And, you know, that's the calling card of this group. These guys are 4.4 and under 40-yard dashes. Matt Breida was the fastest player in football last year.
Right.
He was clocked in miles per hour, faster than Tyreek Hill, faster than Marquise Goodwin.
Wow.
He was close to breaking the speed limit in the school zone there at one point. I joked with him in the locker room. He got a kick out of that. But, the 49ers are all about speed in the backfield. They're willing to sacrifice a few pounds. I know Joe Shasky, who's on the radio with you, wants them to get a big bell cow, right? I think he's been pounding that drum for a while. I don't think Shanahan's gonna do it. I don't think he values that enough to save a roster spot for
it. To go get a LeGarrette Blount type.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen with the 49ers. They're gonna have, smaller, faster running backs, and it looked like that caused them to be predisposed to injury last year. So what are they doing now to counteract that? Instead of getting a bigger running back or, a guy that I guess with Tevin Coleman, he's a guy that didn't get hurt last year, so you get the best of both worlds. But he's another smaller, 205-pound guy, built a little bit like a cannonball, though.
I think
he's pretty durable.
He's stocky.
Yeah, he's stocky, and he lasted those 16 games. So you're getting a guy who is the perfect addition to a stockpile, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to release Jerick McKinnon. They can release him here before April 1st because they've already paid him all his guaranteed money. That goes back to all the contract front-loading that we talked about.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the plan. I think the plan is to stockpile at the position so that way you could either put Jerick McKinnon on the PUP to start the season, and that means that he has more time to recover from his ACL tear, and then you can just go week by week and expect the attrition this time. Because it's going to happen again, maybe not at the level of last year, but there will be attrition in a light running back room. And these guys are, less than 200 pounds, most of them. And then you have options throughout the course of the year. So, yes, they're going to have to cut somebody. Not everybody's going to make it through that roster cut down at the end of training camp, at the end of the preseason. But by getting as many guys on good value deals right now, you leave yourself options later on, and you don't hit a brick wall like they did last year when they had to force Jeff Wilson into game action before he was really ready, and then you saw all those fumbles.
Yeah, and Breida's got the ankle. McKinnon's got the ACL. Mostert broke his arm. Jeff Wilson, what do you have, a shoulder, I think?
Yeah, he was working on a shoulder. They had to bring in Alfred Morris last year, who's obviously on the tail end of his career. Everybody got really excited because he had a few big runs against the Colts, I think, at the preseason. But Alfred Morris was never the fast guy, right? He was always a smart runner. So back in his prime, he was fast enough to make it work in the Kyle Shanahan scheme, which was different a little bit back in Washington. But Alfred Morris definitely lost a step, and that was just a guy to hold the 49ers over for a little while last year. Good guy, though.
Yeah.
Really good guy, but they're doubling down on the speed this year with a lot of it.
Yeah, and stockpiling talent, and it was, 2 years, $10 million for McKinnon, right? For Tevin Coleman, right? So that's a pretty good deal, for a team-friendly deal.
It's a team-friendly deal. I think the cap hit in the first year is only like $3.6 million. It will increase in the second year, so that gives them flexibility. They can decide what to do after year one here. I think he makes the team, obviously, but you never know. You also never know with injuries, and the running back room is really crowded.
Yeah.
Some people have been talking about a potential Matt Breida trade. I know a lot of fans were very upset about that because he's quickly become a fan favorite. I don't think that they're going to part ways with any of these guys just because I think that the plan here is stockpiling. And I think it's valuable at the biggest position of attrition on your football team.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And by the way, 408 with the realist issue of all these running backs are going to be real hard to trust in fantasy, too. No doubt about it. I got news for you. Kyle Shanahan doesn't care about your fantasy football team. We talked about potential, you know, the Odell Beckham Jr. situation and the Antonio Brown. What about trading for a guy like A.J. Green, or, you know, if Atlanta continues to trend in the wrong direction, you know, and this would be down the road a little more, but maybe trying to acquire a guy like Julio Jones, or, you know, the prospect of drafting another wide receiver. I know you said that Kyle Shanahan doesn't need these big-time receivers.
Yeah, but you know what Kyle Shanahan says, and this is a direct quote. If I see Julio Jones walk through that door, I'm not saying no.
Oh, fair enough, so, but it depends on what you'd have to give up to get him, for sure. Like anything else, like Bob Barker said, only if the price is right.
Right, yep.
What about, I think A.J. Green, though, is compelling to me, because here's a guy in the last year of his deal. Cincinnati's not going anywhere. He's got to play. Butcher Boy talks about that horrible turf that they play on in Cincinnati. Always gets guys destroyed. And I got to think, A.J. Green, to go from Cincinnati, Ohio, out here to the Bay Area, I think that'd be a little bit of an upgrade. And, oh, yeah, not having to catch the rock from Andy Dalton. And the guy's still been pretty productive in his career, very productive, even with a trash-ass quarterback like Andy Dalton.
Well, while everybody was losing it over Antonio Brown this offseason, A.J. Green was the name that I thought was more realistic. That's the name I've been talking about since the very start. I mean, if you're going to acquire a 30-plus-year-old receiver who's going to be 31 next season,
yeah,
that obviously I don't think isn't, you know, I want to put this lightly because...
He quit on the Steelers. I mean, I could just throw it out there.
Yeah, and his 2018 season was nowhere near where his 2013 to 2017 seasons were from an efficiency perspective. Everybody falls in love with the high touchdown rate,
right,
but there are other ways to measure... you know, how well a player is vibing with his quarterback.
Juju,
you know,
was the better receiver in,
exactly,
Pittsburgh last,
yeah,
year.
Juju was the better receiver in Pittsburgh. That era had shifted, and that coincided with Antonio Brown turning 30 years old. I know Antonio Brown wants to catch Jerry Rice. He said he wants to catch Jerry Rice. That's his goal. He wants to be Jerry Rice, but not every receiver can be that productive past the age of 30. And,
right,
and I think he's going to be very productive with the Raiders.
I agree.
This is not a black and white issue, but I think there are clear signs that he is now on the downslope.
Yeah,
I think
it's not
we started
a knock
to see
on
him last year.
Yeah, it's not
it's
a knock
natural.
On him. Yeah, he's on the back nine, baby. He's,
exactly,
on the other, he's on the wrong side of 30.
Exactly. So if you're already going to go to the wrong side of 30, then you should do it with a lot less headache, right?
Yeah.
A lot smaller headache and for a much lower price. And it looks like A.J. Green may be a possibility in that regard. Now, we don't know how things are going to move forward. I've heard that Cincinnati is really tough to deal with. I don't know the validity of those rumors or, you know, how all those machinations would work out, but he's under contract for one more year, which makes him a natural candidate for trade discussion rumors.
Right.
And, you know, he fits the mold of what everybody thinks the 49ers need at receiver, tall guy, you know, but more than just the 6'4 height and, you know, the specimen body there. This is a 7-time Pro Bowler. This is a guy that's been productive, that's been a star in the National Football League. And if the 49ers want to add firepower to their receiving core, if Kyle Shanahan finds that absolutely necessary after losing out on OBJ and not really even pursuing Antonio Brown, that seems like the most prudent lower cost, I guess I should say, option to go. It would probably only take a future draft pick. Probably a decently high one, but definitely something that would be more manageable. And I don't think the 49ers are in the business of giving up this year's draft picks. That's why we didn't see them go the limit for OBJ,
yeah,
right? I think that it would take a future year's draft pick, kind of like the D-Ford trade.
All right, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, radio.com sports station. David Lombardi hanging out in studio. Ryan Covey with you on a Sunday morning. Your Terrell Owens piece. Talk to me about that. I just found that so fascinating. And we know T.O. going into the Hall of Fame, although he didn't want to attend the ceremony. But I was down there at Levi Stadium for the Dwight Clark unveiling. T.O. was there for that. And it just seemed like a lot of reparations with Terrell Owens and this 49ers franchise have happened here in the last, 6 months to a year.
Well, I mean, the whole anecdote is how I started my story. I was at the unveiling of the Dwight Clark statue, you know, overcast morning in Santa Clara. I think they're about to play the Rams. They're about to lose by 30 points. I mean, that was going to be the highlight of that day. Terrell Owens wasn't expect it to be there. This is 35, maybe 30 minutes before the unveiling, and I'm just sitting there. I'm in the second row, so I got a good seat. I think I was next to Matt Maiocco, and you know, he, with the work he did on the documentary, the Letters to 87.
So good.
Really good, yeah. So obviously the whole Dwight Clark thing meant so much to him personally, so he was there early too, and we're sitting up in the front, and then I overheard one of the event organizers, you know, it was this lady that was running around making sure that all the seating chart was correct, just, you know, almost panicked, went up to her supervisor and was like, T.O. just called. He landed at the airport. He wants a front row seat. And they were I didn't see anybody ever rearrange a seating chart quicker than that.
It was like in Goodfellas when he shows up with his date and they put a table right in front, right?
Yep.
It was like, everybody clear out, put a table right there in the front, get him some champagne, bottle of our best, come on in, have a seat.
And it was remarkable to me because at the time, this was before Terrell Owens had shown up to get his Hall of Fame ring. That would happen about a month later before the game against the Raiders. So, and, you know, this was a few months separated from the comments about him not going into the Hall of Fame as a 49er to TMZ. I was under the impression that the relationship was still sour between Terrell Owens and the 49ers, but he called, he wanted to be there, he was landing at SJC, and he was on his way to Levi's. Sure enough, about 20 minutes later, shows up in the gold jacket.
I was in one of the studios, and he walked right by the window, and I'm like, "Hey, that was T.O."
Yep,
and straight up, and wearing that mustard blazer, and I'm like, "T.O.'s here. Things just got turned up."
You've called it mustard, and
I like think mustard. I rock mustard.
Well, but it's more accurate, right?
That's what I call it—a mustard blazer. That's a Ryan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.